I interacted with some very strange looking people in some of these dreams, at one point climbing a big banyan tree with a group of homeless men before realizing my raggedy companions were actually from out there, another planet, another dimension, another world. Eventually, I remembered Ron's crystal and moved it to a shelf in my office. The relevant real dreams immediately stopped, and they have not reoccurred. Since I passed on the crystal to a sick friend, I have not used it again in an attempt to re-experience these special dreams. Chapter 6, Melanie Green, Gallbladder Fixed. A registered nurse and former sales representative, Melanie Green is active in the Experiencers Support Group Network. She is 39 years old, and is currently pursuing a master's degree in counseling. She lives in Northern Virginia with her husband and two young children. A vivacious and outgoing person, Melanie was so busy with her studies, mothering duties, and volunteer work with fellow experiencers that it was difficult to find the time we needed for discussing her celestial healing experiences. Because of her professional medical background, however, she was able to relate in some very specific detail her personal encounters with the ETs who she believes healed her. _ I found her professionalism to be impressive, her healing accounts even more so. Winter can be a difficult time of year for me because I suffer from seasonal affective disorder, a temporary depression thought to be brought on by a lack of sunlight. Because of a string of migraines, I have been unable to use my special full spectrum light to help combat the depression. So I have been sleeping a lot. Quite a health report from someone who believes the aliens have healed her of various conditions, eh? But I have had some remarkable experiences that seem to indicate that my ET visitors have taken more than a casual interest in my health. My life has been like a long walk in two worlds. I have spent the last 8 years trying to bring these two worlds together, trying to merge the two paths and learn where I have been, where I am going. This other world lay dormant, like a forgotten dream, until my children began to share little pieces of it with me. In 1986, my son was only 2 when he first told me about the guy who came into his room through the window, out of the dark night sky. I trembled inside, listening to the recurring dream of my own childhood. My daughter shared more stories about her visitors and, gradually, her curiosity and fearlessness gave me the courage to examine my own memories. By 1990, I had the strength to call them memories instead of dreams. Living in two worlds is something like trying to put together a puzzle when half of the pieces are painted over and you must guess at the picture. As I turn over each piece, I strive to see it all in the best possible light, to bring healing out of the fear, light to the darkness. I believe I have found the silver lining to my ET contact experiences and the people who have shared these experiences with me. The profound connection between ET experiences is as fascinating as the experiences themselves. The 100, exchange of energy, creative energy as the ETs call it, has great potential. My friend Ron Blevins, see Chapter 5, has taught me to apply this energy as a healing force, which he learned how to do from communications with a group of tall ETs I have encountered as well. Ron has also used this creative energy to bring about the resolution, or healing, of some of my medical conditions. I have come to believe that Ron was instrumental in the ET intervention into a very painful gallbladder condition I was suffering from a few years ago. In early 1996, I began to consistently experience severe pain in the right upper quadrant of my abdomen every time I ate. During both of my pregnancies, I had experienced gallbladder trouble that had subsided after my children were born. I had been free of any gallbladder problems for 7 years. When the pain began again that winter, it was intermittent. But by early spring, the pain was constant and severe. Even fat-free foods, which should not bother the gallbladder, would cause several hours of pain. I began avoiding food and losing weight. In April of that year, I went to the doctor and began a series of tests to determine the source of the pain. A sonogram of the gallbladder revealed no stones, so gallstones were not the problem. The doctor informed me that they would need to do more tests, However, because the sonogram had revealed a tumor on my liver, I was scared to death, and in pain all the time. I next underwent a scan with radioactive contrast so that the doctors could study the flow of blood through my liver. For this test, they injected into my arm a solution that was tagged with a radioactive isotope. Then they took a series of pictures of the blood supply to the tumor. When my condition threatened to interfere with our travel plans, Ron said that he would talk to the ATs about it. I remember giving him a quizzical look. Once my family was reassured that I did not have liver cancer, they gave up their protest. The night before I was to begin the drive south, I packed a suitcase and went to bed early, hoping that the abdominal pain would subside so that I could get some sleep before my trip. Abductees joke with one another about the mysterious hour of 3 a.m. because, for some reason, many of us will awaken inexplicably between 3:15 and 3:30. Oddly enough, abductees on both coasts and in all time zones report waking at this particular time. Most of us believe that we are returned from abductions at this hour. In the early morning hours of May 3, 1996, I awakened with a start. I said to myself, out loud, "Oh, good, now I don't have to have my gallbladder removed." I laughed, wondering why on earth I would make such an absurd statement, and I went back to sleep. The clock next to the bed read 3:25. Since it was a 500-mile drive to the conference, we left early that morning. I had adopted a habit of avoiding breakfast and lunch so that the morning and early afternoon hours could be pain-free and productive. By mid-afternoon I was hungry, so I reluctantly pulled off the interstate to get something to eat, knowing that the remainder of the day would be marred by the familiar gnawing pain in my abdomen. It was not until several hours later, when I was unpacking my suitcase in the hotel room where the conference was being held, that it dawned on me, I was not in pain. I suddenly recalled my 3:25 awakening and the accompanying thought that I would not have to undergo surgery after all. I was incredulous, but began to consider the idea that my gallbladder had somehow been fixed the previous night. Excited by this possibility, I recruited a few of my fellow conference-goers to accompany me to the Waffle House next door. I ordered a bacon cheeseburger with onion rings, the greasiest item on the menu, and ate the whole thing. Still no pain. Suddenly and for no apparent reason, a painful condition that had plagued me for more than 6 months had been completely alleviated. When I returned from the conference, I cancelled the remaining diagnostic test and my appointment with the surgeon. I encountered some resistance, but I simply explained to the doctor that my pain was gone and I saw no need for further tests at that time. I wish I'd had the guts to tell him what I believe happened to me. There is no doubt in my mind that the ETs repaired whatever was wrong with my gallbladder. Now, why would the ETs heal me, and why at that particular point in time, after so many months of pain? I have no conscious recall of an abduction experience taking place on the night before my trip. 104, but I think that my gallbladder problem finally came to their attention as a result of the radiation left in my body from the radioisotope study conducted earlier in the week. During a routine abduction, they probably detected the low-level radiation and, in asking me about it, learned of the upcoming surgery. So they fixed it. And it is very possible they fixed it because of Ron's intervention. Whether they fixed it out of a sense of goodwill, or to prevent someone else from messing with their laboratory specimen, is unknown. It appears the ATs have their own reasons for keeping me well. Whatever their reasons, you will not be hearing any complaints from me. At times, I wonder whether some of my minor, chronic health problems are the result of my abduction experiences. I have chronic headaches, fatigue, and my memory is not what it should be for someone not yet 40. Just the stress of repeated abductions could be enough to impact my health in an undesirable way. Still, it does seem that many interventions have been made on my behalf. The motive behind such interventions cannot be known. Are the ATs intervening in order to enhance my quality of life? Or are they simply protecting their own investment in me? In the spring of 1991, I was in a car accident while driving a car full of children to school. We were rear-ended at a stoplight by a driver who failed to brake. Fortunately, the kids all had their seat belts on and were unharmed. I was not seriously injured because I was also wearing my seat belt, but I did end up with a very sore neck and bruised knees where they hit the steering column. The other driver's insurance paid for a few chiropractic visits, after which I thought I was fine. We settled the claim. A few months later, I was extremely dismayed when I began to experience pain in my right knee. The knee would click when I climbed stairs, and sometimes it locked up, making it very uncomfortable, if not impossible, to walk. The impact from the car accident had resulted in loose cartilage in the knee, which would require surgery. Since I had already settled the accident claim, it would be no simple matter to get the insurance companies to agree on who would pay for my surgery. But before I could even make an appointment with the orthopedic surgeon, the click and pain in my knee suddenly disappeared. All that was left behind was a scar, a new, perfect, 1/4 inch in diameter, circular scar on the bottom of my knee. In another case of ET healing, I actually have conscious recall of the alien involvement. This was a conscious healing experience, not a dream, not recalled under hypnosis. I also have physical evidence that was witnessed by others at the time. I was never diagnosed by doctors for the problem that the aliens healed, but I am actually quite grateful for that. In the fall of 1993, the tall shimmery beings I often interact with took me once again. These are the ETs who sometimes abduct me, beings I can never see clearly, aliens who appear as shimmering density in the atmosphere. They tower over me at about 7,106 feet in height. They are kind but stern, formal. I think - they are the same beings Ron describes. I know that they will not hurt me, so I am not afraid when I am with them. But I do feel disgruntled as I often find myself in circumstances that are not of my own design. In this particular instance, I found myself sitting on a table, watching two of the ETs discuss me as doctors on rounds discuss their patients. There was no spoken dialogue, but I could clearly understand what they were saying telepathically. Just like doctors, they were talking about me as if I were not there, even though they must have known that I could hear them. One of the ETs turned toward me, gesturing at my chest with his hand. A vertical plane of light appeared out of nowhere, intersecting my body at chest level. There was no discomfort, no sensation at all, but I jumped with surprise. The ET gestured toward me again, this time with a slightly different motion. A horizontal plane of light appeared, intersecting my body in a cross section with the first light plane. The light planes looked like floating sheets of glass, brightly lit from within, and with a prismatic quality, glimmering with a rainbow-like effect when viewed at an angle. I felt both fascinated and terrified at the same time. Suddenly, a transparent, highly detailed, three-dimensional cross-section of one of my underscore breasts floated away from my body and into the air in front of me. I gasped loudly. Floating there before me was a holographic model of my breast. My breast. A tiny dot of light glowed in the middle of the holographic image. One of the tall beings said to the other, "It is still very small. She doesn't even know that it is there. The conscious memory ends there. It seems that whenever I become agitated or disagreeable during an abduction, the ETs switch me off, putting me into a more passive state for their protection and my own." But what I did remember was disturbing, as it seemed obvious to me that the ETs had detected an early breast tumor. I was only 34 at the time, and knew that it would be unlikely that my doctor would order a mammogram since I did not have a discernible lump in my breast. I certainly did not want to tell him that aliens had informed me I had a small, undetectable breast tumor. So I did not take action. I did not take the logical, immediate step most women would take in such a situation. Instead, I lost a good amount of sleep over the next few weeks, wondering what I should do. Meanwhile, a very curious thing began to happen. Marks began to appear on my body. Even though I had no conscious memory of ongoing abductions, almost daily a new mark would appear on my breast. About 3/8 of an inch in diameter, the marks resembled minor burns, raised red circles like insect bites, always in the vicinity of my right breast. Sometimes there would be a puncture wound, too, in the center of one of the red circles, almost like a needle 108 mark. One morning, I awoke to find needle-like punctures on my left eyelid just below the brow. Another time, I found a needle mark on the inside of one of my arms, as if blood had been drawn. I was excited, frightened, and, in a way, relieved. Although I did not know who was actually doing what to me, it certainly seemed as if the tall, shimmery ETs might be treating the condition they had discovered during the hologram experience. I had never heard about even a similar experience from other abductees, so I was beside myself. But the marks on my body were proof enough that it was not my imagination. I became quite the exhibitionist that month, ensuring myself of a few witnesses to the marks that kept appearing on my right breast. When I turned 35, I had a mammogram. The results were normal. This year one will turn 40, and I will go for a second mammogram. I am anxious to receive another clean bill of health, as my aunt died of breast cancer last year, and my mother had a lumpectomy in 1997 as well. In 1993, I had no idea that my family history for breast cancer would be so strong. Knowing what I know now, I am grateful that someone was looking out for me. And I have no trouble at all believing that the tall ETs diagnosed and treated an early cancer in my right breast. In 1994, I had the opportunity to discuss my hologram experience with a prominent UFO researcher. He told me that other abductees had reported being shown holograms, and that many abductees held their belief that their illnesses were diagnosed and treated by aliens. I also find it interesting that in the last few years holograms have begun to be used by the medical community in certain diagnostic and surgical procedures. The abduction phenomenon is deep and complex. The physical aspects of the abduction experience are only the tip of the iceberg. There is a profound, yet unknown purpose behind what is going on here. By definition, it is likely to be beyond our understanding. Their purpose is alien to us. For me, the ET's interest in our emotions, our hearts and souls, holds a more compelling question. Because the most profound change I have experienced is an extraordinary increase in my empathic abilities. When I sit and listen to someone, I hear their words with my ears and I feel their feelings. Their feelings seem to jump inside me so that I actually feel what they feel, positive or negative. As my personal history of ET encounters came into consciousness, I abandoned a successful career in sales to pursue a degree in counseling. I have an unwavering sense of mission, the exact nature of which has yet to be revealed. Each facet of my life seems to be another step, in preparation for some eventuality. I am compulsively studying alternative healing and mind-body medicine these days, not knowing why, but knowing that the reason will be revealed someday soon. I don't know whether to hope for or dread the coming of that day. My sense of help for the future comes from the 110s community of experiencers. While the motives of the ETs still remain to be seen, encounter experiencers know that our intentions toward one another are good and true. Once we set aside our disagreements about whether ET contact is good or bad, we find a rich and fertile ground for building community. Rather than imposing our views on one another, we learn to accept the validity of individual experience and embrace our differences. People who have extraterrestrial encounters often experience great isolation. I have spoken to hundreds of experiencers and it is the isolation that is the toughest part of the lives of most experiencers, including those of us who view our experiences as positive. Experiencers feel as if they have come home when they finally find others to talk to about their encounters. Those of us with a history of ET contact have experienced the loss of a world, the world we grew up believing to be true. When you realize that your life has been, in actuality, two completely separate lives, there is an existential crisis of profound proportions. You are then forced to synthesize a new worldview. For encounter experiencers and abductees, the isolation ends when we come together. With the support we bring to each other, we can help one another to heal, blending the two worlds, healing the split. This is the magic that occurs when experiencers come together. Chapter 7, Nan Cooper, Healed by the Arcturians. Nan Cooper lives in Pine, Arizona, where she and her husband have a new age, spiritual literary and music publishing company called Planetary Heart Publications. She is in her late 40s. When she heard about my book in process, Nan wrote me a long letter detailing her own healing experiences with extraterrestrials. Unlike many experiencers, Nan has specific ETs she seeks out for help in healing herself of various physical problems. I found her stories quite fascinating, and her particular approach rather unique. We conducted our interviews during the early morning hours, before her busy day at her publishing business began. Have been extremely interested in the topic of healing in relation to extraterrestrial contact, and I believe that I have had several experiences myself. First, let me offer a general overview of my personal health problems and concerns. In 1980, I had a pap smear that was abnormal, indicating cervical dysplasia. I was retested several times within 6-112 months, each result indicating the abnormality had worsened, advancing another stage. Finally, my gynecologist suggested that if I let it go untreated, I would have full-blown cancer within several years. So I underwent conization of the cervix to remove any abnormal cervical cells. I felt fine, but my doctor was not satisfied. He pushed for partial hysterectomy. Meanwhile, I went to a channeler, a young lady who did a channeled health reading in an Edgar Case style, that is, in a sleep state, lying prone. Edgar Case was a great American psychic who conducted many medical readings in a sleep trance state. The reading claimed that I didn't have a cancer cell in my body, nor would I. Consequently, I refused the partial hysterectomy and continued to have checkups on a frequent basis. This experience caused me to reevaluate a great number of things in my life. My second health concern has been a chronic case of sinus problems, which began in 1972 when I broke my nose in the minor accident. Although my eye was bruised and blackened underneath, I had no idea that my nose was broken. However, I was to discover years later that the injury resulted in a significant deviation of the septum. A constantly runny nose, headaches, and swelling of the sinuses forced me to use antihistamines. I could barely function on the medication. I then chose to receive bi-weekly electronic acupuncture treatments instead, which helped me to recuperate. I was not bothered very much by the sinus problems for a number of years. In 1990, a dentist in Columbus, Ohio, showed me some x-rays that indicated that my sinuses were totally blocked and that I did indeed have a deviation of the septum. My husband and I then spent the fall and winter of 1993-1994 in Munt's Park in between Flagstaff and Sedona, Arizona, where we were learning the publishing business. A wood-burning stove was our primary heat source. Because I breathed ashes all the time, my nose ran profusely for 5 straight months. However, it was during this time that I began to have some subtle visionary experiences with ETs, notably the Arcturians. So I read everything I could get my hands on regarding extraterrestrials, but mostly the material that was more spiritual in nature. I was not very interested in the hardcore evidence of UFO researchers, even though our neighbors, a very reclusive couple, were, in fact, UFO researchers. Sedona has a reputation as a hotbed for all kinds of UFO activity. There are people in Sedona, and elsewhere, who experience things that are seen as Arcturians are the extraterrestrials from Arcturus, the brightest star in the constellation Boötilde Copyrights, approximately 36 light years away. These light body beings are believed to assist humans in changing the self through conscious awareness of the unconscious mind, to evolve and ascend spiritually. A channeled message from the Arcturians explains, "We are not here to rescue you. We are here to help you enhance or amplify your healing energies. Nan recently informed me she has learned that one of the more powerful ET healers she has worked with is actually Arcturian, Andromedan, that is, the offspring of an Arcturian and an Andromedan union. Being on the darker side, I know that these experiences do exist, but I do not consider them to be my own reality. Since multiple realities do exist simultaneously, I believe my reality to be quite different than the reality of those who choose to view ETs as evil. I choose to view most extraterrestrials as benign, loving, loyal, technologically advanced, and quite capable of establishing wonderful interactions with willing humans in order to assist them with healing of the body, mind, emotions, and spirit. I also believe that those ETs who have engaged in abductions have done so for the express purpose of genetically creating a separate race of heartier beings in order to allow their own race to survive. Although I do not agree with their approach, I do have compassion for these ETs and I understand their plight. Because my reality is of a higher nature of living in light and love, and because I choose to look on the ETs as benign, I believe that the ETs without higher motives will not bother me. Only fear attracts negative experiences, including negative ET experiences. During that 5-month period of breathing ashes, I believe the Arcturians were helping me. I feel that during this period I was being adjusted and operated on in a sleep and or meditative state with my conscious permission. Of course, I had a sore on the inside of the end of my nose that would not heal up, no matter what I did. It truly felt as if an object had been inserted there, but I could never see anything. Since my nose and head were being worked on a lot during sleep and meditation states, I just continued to believe in my very benign, loving connection to the Arcturians, whom I felt had only my best intentions and good health in mind. When my husband and I returned to Ohio in the spring of 1994, my sinuses began to clear up. The sore at the end of my nose seemed to magically disappear. I have always suspected that a benign implant was placed in my nasal area to facilitate my healing. However, this has never been confirmed by an X-ray. In early 1996, another pap smear came out slightly abnormal. I knew in my heart of hearts that this situation needed my attention, that my dysfunctional female health problem was raising its ugly head again. It was a distinct message to me that it was time to clear this area of my body. However, this time the emotional and mental imprints had to be released as well. Between pap tests, I did some intense visualizing and healing work with the Arcturians, focusing on the cervical area of my body. I released much repressed emotion around the manifestation of this unhealthy condition. Intuitively, I knew when the healing work was complete. I also knew that I was completely well and did not have to experience this health problem again. I went for a retest 2 weeks later, and this time the pap smear was normal. My pap tests have been normal ever since, and I believe I have been completely healed in this area, with the help of the Arcturians. They are incredible doctors and healers. 116. In April of 1996, I made an appointment to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist. My sinuses had been acting up again for several months, and I was so uncomfortable that I was ready to consider a surgical procedure. The night before I went to see the doctor, I had a dream that he would tell me there was nothing wrong with me. During the appointment, the doctor poked and prodded my nasal passages, all to no avail. He said he wouldn't even waste his time giving me an X-ray because he could find no appreciable deviation. He said he suspected that my nasal problems were due to allergies. This was amazing to me. No more deviation? At the time, I had been introduced in my meditation state to a powerful ET healer. I had been receiving healing treatments and adjustments in my nasal area, again while in sleep and in meditation. I feel that this ET healer may have helped to facilitate the healing of my deviated septum, and I am truly grateful to him. In August of 1996, I accepted the position of librarian at a brand new elementary school in central Ohio. We moved outside of the town where my job was, out in the middle of farm country. This meant we were constantly breathing in chemical pesticides. At the school, all of the library books were new. So were the carpets. I was informed that the books and carpets were saturated with formaldehyde. By this time in my spiritual journey, I had become ultra-sensitive to many toxins because I had been raising my vibration and becoming clearer,